Welcome to A Second Chance, personal stories of near-death experiences, the journey, and beyond. For the most positive and uplifting time on the radio, stay tuned and get in tune with your host, Gina Kane of Second Chance Radio.
Welcome to A Second Chance Podcast. Today, our guest is a little different than what we would normally have on the show. She is here to share with us some legal advice of things that you may need to know to be prepared for planning for death or sickness. And as you all know, I had a cardiac event and was in the hospital and had no idea what I needed to do because I was not prepared. So I'm going to let her introduce herself and tell you a bit about her. Here I have Nicole Whipp. Thank you, Nicole, for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me on your show, Gina. I'm really happy to be here and I'm really happy to talk about this topic. Let me make one thing clear, though, before we move forward. You made a comment along the line that I'm going to be giving some legal advice, and I just want to be specific that I'm not actually giving out legal advice in this podcast. I'm giving general information that's specific to legal topics. Now, I am an attorney, and I'm an attorney in the state of Michigan, and I'm also licensed to practice in Hawaii, but I'm going to be talking about legal topics that are general to just about anybody, but I'm not giving out actually specific legal advice. And if you do need specific legal advice, which you probably do, you need to seek the advice of an attorney for yourself.
Excellent. Thank you, Nicole. Could you tell us a little bit about how you came to do what you do and tell us a little bit about what it is that you do every day?
Well, I am currently an estate planning and elder law attorney, and my law practice is called the Family and Aging Law Center, and we really focus on helping families manage crisis and prepare for crisis. And it's really one of those things that we don't like to think about. We don't like to think about having a bad healthcare event, as you are well aware, Gina, and we don't want to think about our death. And yet, the thing is I always tell people, estate planning is an act of love. And so if you really love the people in your life, you really should be planning for them because it's so important. And because when you don't plan, when you fail to plan, it causes a burden. And so that's really what led me to doing this, because I was for many years prior to starting this law firm, a litigator. And so I practice mainly in the areas of family law, which really what that means is divorce law. And I had a very busy law practice doing that, but as all of you can probably imagine, it really was not satisfying to me. I didn't love it. I did help people, and I felt like I was helping people because sometimes, you know, if you're in a bad marriage, getting out is the best thing to do. And yet, for many reasons, the practice just really wasn't satisfying to me. And it would stress me out. And I was a mother. I had become a mother later in life. And I had a young son at home. And my husband was like, you need to be more involved. And, you know, you need to stop working so much. So I really started looking at estate planning. But I got to be honest, when I first started considering this, you know, I was used to being in the courtroom and, you know, doing trials and hearings and things like that and sort of thinking on my feet. And I looked at estate planning really as very boring, fill in the blank kind of lawyering. And for me, I just couldn't imagine that. I'm really not that kind of person at all. But when I started understanding more about estate planning and understanding how it can really help people, and then also when I added in the component of elder law, it really changed my view on the whole topic, and I've become a really passionate advocate of it. So it led me down that path, but it wasn't a natural fit at the beginning, and it wasn't something I ever actually considered doing when I first went to law school.
Well, I love that you're sharing that, because a lot of people that have had a near-death experience have figured out that there's more to life, and they start trying to figure out how to find their passion, and it sounds like that is exactly what you've done.
Oh, definitely. You know, I didn't have a near-death experience for that, but it almost felt like it was. I will tell you that I was at a crisis point in my life when I decided to move into this decision to do this law firm. And I literally walked away from my old life one day and started this as a new life. And it is really amazing when you make the choice to do that, when you dedicate yourself to following something that's in your heart, that what opens up to you, because I was a successful attorney before, but I am exponentially more successful today. I've grown my business in leaps and bounds in 2 years, And I really can say it's because I'm able to pursue my passion and I have the energy for it. And I feel it's in my heart to do it. And so it's just been, it's been an amazing transition for me, and it's opened up all kinds of wonderful things to me. But it took an act of courage and faith, I think, to just say, I'm going to walk away. But sometimes that's what needs to happen.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for sharing. So if someone has not had a near-death experience and they're going along and life is fantastic, why would they think to stop and take the time to do the planning, Nicole?
Well, because life is uncertain. And you know this, Gina, and I hope that your listeners know your story. And if you don't, you definitely need to hear Gina's story. But here you are, a young mother that really had no health problems, suddenly hit and you were struck with a major health event that was very frightening to you. And you knew that you had neglected to plan for your children in that moment. You knew that. And I know you knew it because you were actually posting from the hospital. I remember how amazed I was when I saw you saying, somebody help me. I need to do something about this really quickly. And we live in an age where social media does make things happen a little more quickly, but estate planning isn't something you want to be doing quickly. You want to have time to think about it and not be throwing it together in a crisis situation. And so life happens. I don't care who you are. I don't care how healthy you are. I don't care how wonderful your life is. You are just as much at risk as anybody else to have a crisis happen to you. And so that's where this comes into play, because we don't want to go through life pretending like it's never going to happen to us. You get to a certain point in your life, and you know that that's not a true statement, but we still act like that, even as adults. And I say this because I have clients in their 70s and 80s that have done no planning. And because they're in so much denial, and you would think that by the time you get to that point in your life, that you would be like, yeah, I need to do something. But it isn't always that way. It's easy to put it off. You know, there's no, as we would say in the U.S., no April 15th, meaning tax day, for estate planning. And so, you know, so nobody's making you do it. And so it's easy to put it off, and it's not something pleasant to think about. Yet life happens. And so none of us are exempt from death.
Well, maybe we should make a day then that is for estate planning, Nicole. And I definitely owe you a huge thank you, because when the nurse came in and said, you could die at any time, you just had a heart attack and we don't know if you're going to be okay, have you done your will? That was more scary than anything else that happened. And after I reached out and you responded, I ended up writing everything on a piece of paper, which probably isn't very legal. So I'm hoping that what you're sharing today will help people to be a little better prepared than I was.
Let's look at it. There's sort of two angles to look at this from. So, you know, when you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, you are in between two dynamics. Most of us are. So you have your children and then you have your parents. And so one of the things that I always tell parents of children, especially parents of minor children, is, you know, here you are, your mom and your dad, and how much money do you spend on your kids on a daily, weekly, monthly basis? I mean, you know, especially around where I live, parents are very generous with their children, much more generous than any generations have been with their children in any previous thing. I mean, it's sort of ridiculous how much we spend on our kids, but that's what people choose to do, right? Yet you'll give them everything. You'll spend all the money. You'll do everything that you can to make their lives better. That's what we do as parents. But you haven't thought of the thing that's most important, because at the end of the day, what is the second worst thing that's going to happen to your children if something happens to you? Well, the first worst thing, of course, is something happens to you. But the second worst thing is that you didn't plan for them. Mm-hmm. And as a parent, I hope if you have young children, you need to stop and think about what I'm saying here. Are you really being, and this is going to come off a little bit harsh, but I need you to hear me. Are you really being a good parent if you haven't planned for your kids? Are you really being a good parent? Because we go through life just assuming though it's not going to happen to us. And yet you need to plan for your children, because there's a lot of things that you may assume to be true right this moment that are not true legally. And so you can't make assumptions about what's really going to happen. So let me give you some examples of what this means. Let's say that you are married and you are in the vehicle with your spouse and your children. You and your spouse are sitting in the front seat and your children are in the back seat. You get on a head-on collision and both you and your spouse die. Who's going to take your kids? Do you know? And a lot of times people will say, well, my parents or my sister or, you know, my sister will just come and take them and or whatever. Well, let me tell you that that's not the way the law works. And it's not the way the law works in either Canada or the United States. Somebody can't just come and take your kids. It's not that simple, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is, and is it going to be the person that you want to come take your kids? Because, you know, if you don't plan for who you want to have your children, then there might be a scenario that happens that somebody that you would not want to have your children ends up with them because maybe they're inclined to fight for them. And why would they do that? Who knows? Sometimes they may do it because there might be money involved. Maybe they just do it because they think that they should, but it might be the person that you don't want. And a great example of this could be, you know, you might have a relative that really looks good on paper. So what do I mean like that by that? Well, you might have somebody that, let's say, you know, maybe one of them is a lawyer or a doctor or has a good job. It doesn't even matter. They don't have to even have a job as a lawyer or a doctor, but they have a good steady job. But then maybe their spouse is an alcoholic or has substance abuse problems or just really is a horrible person that you'd never want to be raised by your children. But because that other person really looks good on paper and they're a close family member, it might make sense to the judge to give your children to that person. But maybe you would never want your children raised in a home like that because you don't trust the spouse, let's say. Or, you know, maybe the person that you really would, the person that you feel has the biggest heart and would raise your children in the way that you want, maybe they don't look so good on paper. So in my case, I have a sister-in-law that, you know, she's college educated, but she's single and she lives in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. But she would be, in my opinion, the absolute right person to take my three-year-old son. She is a very loving person, and she would raise him as well as she could in the way that I would have done it. But she is not the best looking on paper in the family. And so if you want to be able to control those decisions for your children, which, by the way, you should because you are the parent, then you need to have proper legal documentation making those decisions and setting forth the reasons why you're making those decisions.
Oh, absolutely. This is giving me goosebumps because I just learned about this in the hospital and they told me, I don't know if it's the same there as it is in Canada, but they said your kids would be given to a foster home first before they would even be willing to look at who they would go to.
Wow. Well, that may be also the case in the United States as a temporary measure. Very rarely in the United States are your children going to be permanently placed in foster care unless, of course, there's nobody else to take them or nobody else willing to step up. Mm-hmm. But definitely that can be a temporary measure. So, and, you know, Child Protective Services comes in, they take them and put them into a foster care situation. Well, that could drag on for weeks, months, who knows how long. And I always tell my clients, listen, one thing I can assure you is that you do not want your children in the hands of Child Protective Services for even one moment. Mm-mm. You don't want them to be with strangers for even one moment. It is scary. And you don't know what's going to happen. And you don't know. So by failing to plan, yes, that is entirely likely that that will be the result. And it may not be the result forever, but it could be the result for too long for your children.
So what is it then that a parent can do if they're planning ahead of time?
Well, you need to have proper legal documents that name who you want as the guardians of your children. And when I say proper legal documents, now this is going to be either a state or province specific issue about what constitutes proper legal documents. But you don't want to be writing it on a napkin in the hospital or on a piece of paper in the hospital. You want to actually have a fully executed legal document that's specific to, you know, the state that you live in or the province you live in. And so this can be a will. It might be a trust. But that's one thing. Another thing that a lot of parents may consider doing are what we might call standby legal guardian documents or limited powers of attorney over your children. And so this is a little bit different of a concept, but it's along the same line, where it's somebody that can come and take care of your children, even in a temporary situation, until the legal guardian can either resume their duties or come in and take over their duties. And so a situation like that might be where, like, for example, my standby legal guardian documents include my next door neighbor, because I would much rather have my next door neighbor be able to come and take my son and keep a hold of him for several hours or even a day or two until my mom could come or, you know, my sister-in-law could come. I want for that person to have legal authority. If I'm in a car accident, if I have a heart attack, if I have anything happen to me, I want for there even to be a temporary person that has the authority to watch my son in the event of an emergency. But this isn't going to necessarily be the person that's going to become the full legal guardian, but it's just in that kind of emergency situation where they're going to be people that you know, like, and trust and are going to be able to put in that situation. So that's a slightly different thing, and it's a little more of an advanced concept that not everybody does.
It's a great idea. I would never even have thought of that.
Well, that's what I'm here for, Gina.
I'm so glad you're here. So what would be the next step? I know for us, they said that you should keep your money separate from the people that are going to be taking care of your kids, and I don't know if that would be the same in every situation.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's the same in every situation, but you can keep legal guardianship, possession of your children's person, separate from possession and control of their money. And this can be very important because, you know, you might have somebody in your life that is the most loving, caregiving person, just not good with money, can't keep a dime in their pocket to save their life, right? And so you'd want them raising your kids, but, oh gosh, the thought of leaving your kids' money to this person is just not a good, you know, it's not a good idea. Well, there can be named a separate person to do that job.
Fabulous.
Also, another thing that you want to take into consideration is not naming a couple to act as the guardians of your minor children. And so the reason that you might not want to name a couple is because the couple might break up or one of them might die. And so you don't want a situation where you name a couple as the guardians. So let's say, you know, your sister and her husband. And then let's say something happens to your sister and now the children are left with her husband. Like, that might not be what you want.
I could see that, and you have a very good point there.
The other thing to think about is that your children, if you don't plan properly, at least in the United States, and I have a feeling it's true in Canada as well, that any inheritance that you leave them is going to go automatically to them outright at age 18. And so I think we can all agree that very few 18-year-olds are prepared to take on the responsibility of any significant finances. And so, like, a lot of times where this is going to come into play is beneficiary designations. So many people have beneficiary designations on their assets. But when you leave assets to a minor via beneficiary designations, they will receive them at 18. And so that is very rarely what people really want. But this is a great example of not understanding how planning, how really thinking through planning can make a huge difference. Because your 18-year-old is going to go out and blow it. Very few 18-year-olds understand money very well.
Yeah, I was just reading a book that said something along the lines of they're discovering that the prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed now until 25 years old.
Right. And so an example of that, yeah, my office, if my clients want to try and leave money to kids outright at less than 25, I usually have that conversation with them because it's 25 is probably the minimum at which somebody can really be trusted to manage their money all to themselves. And some people have a hard time with that because they're like, oh, I have really responsible kids. Or they're like, I was really responsible at a younger age. And that might be true, but things have changed and times are changing. And we tend to infantilize our children for much longer. And so they don't, you know, even taking aside the brain dynamics, the actual physical maturity of the brain, we also have a social maturity that doesn't come along for most people until much later now. So, you know, these are things to be taking into consideration for sure.
And so give us an example of how you may perhaps write things up if you were to leave, say, $2 million of life insurance and you have a couple different situations. Potentially, you could just be leaving all of it to your husband, but if something happened to both of you, then you need to figure out what you're going to do with that money to take care of your kids. How might you see something like that done?
Well, you might either do it via a testamentary trust in a will. And a testamentary trust is a trust that is created in a will, so it doesn't come into being after your death, because wills do not become fully mature legally until after your death. Mm-hmm. And so this is a trust that in most states in the United States, and I have no idea how it works in Canada, would need a probate process, would need a court process to get the trust put together. You need to be a court approval, but the terms of the trust would specify what you'd want to happen. And then talking about the terms of the trust, similarly to a living trust, which would be a trust that you put together and is in place today. So if you are going to have a life insurance policy, for most people, the better idea is to have the trust, whether it's a testamentary trust or a living trust, named as the beneficiary, and then have the trust state how the assets are going to be distributed. This is important no matter what kind of asset you have, whether it's the house, you know, bank accounts, tax deferred accounts, you know, IRAs, individual retirement accounts here in the United States, things like that. You want to make sure that you have a trust that can properly take those types of assets, because this is now I'm sort of treading into a much more complex area, but most revocable living trusts can't take an IRA without causing a lot of tax problems for Americans. So you don't necessarily want to do that, but you can set a trust up in a way that it can take your asset without causing bad tax problems. But you want the trust to say what's going to happen. And the good thing is the trust is very flexible. So the trust can say, all right, this money is held for the benefit of the minor children in equal portions until age 25, at which point they can receive it outright, they can receive it in trust, they can receive it as a lifetime annuity. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can set it up. But until they're age 25, the trustee, whoever you've chosen to be in charge, is going to be the person that's going to make determinations about how the money can be distributed on their behalf. And so maybe you're allowing them to have distributions for educational purposes or for healthcare reasons. And it can get as involved, like sometimes I have clients that will say, well, my grandchildren cannot receive any outright inheritance unless they've accumulated at least $250,000 of their own assets. And until they've done that, they aren't getting any money. And that's pretty crazy in some ways. But if you think about it, it serves a great purpose. And the purpose really is you're saying, unless you are capable of acquiring assets on your own, I'm not giving you mine. You are entitled to receive these until you have proven that you can acquire assets and be responsible about them. So that's just something that some people choose to do. And it can be a very good incentive because money spoils people.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I really enjoyed doing that interview with Nicole, and next week we will be back with part two. There was just so much information to share that we couldn't possibly put it into one interview. There's a couple of resources that I would love to leave with you. The first one is Nicole's website, Smart Planning 101, and she has a podcast, Smart Planning 101. I will put the links at everydayisasecondchance.com for you. And the second one is Jonathan Fields' Good Life Project, Those Angsty Teen Years. And he talks a lot about the same thing we were discussing of how children are not ready to handle that type of money. They talk about the development of the prefrontal cortex and all the other things that go with that. So I think you will find that interesting. I'd like to thank everybody that has left a review. Today's review I would like to feature is from Lisa 2 in the United States, and she says, so unique and not a sci-fi show. It's storytelling goodness. So thank you again, everybody, for listening. Please leave your comments at everydayisasecondchance.com. I love to read them. Love your input on what you'd like to hear coming up. and I will see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to Second Chance Radio. Personal stories of near-death experiences, the journey, and beyond. For the most positive and uplifting time on the radio. So tune in again with your host, Gina Kane of Second Chance Radio.